Ladies and gentlemen, please rise for the playing of our national anthem.
Baseball fans, you're listening to Babes, Babes.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Babes, Babes. When we think of ballpark stadiums, the things that come to mind are most likely the ballpark dogs, the smell of popcorn, maybe an expensive ice cold beer here, and some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. But the lasting sound of the organ echoing through the ballpark is probably one of those staples that we take for granted. Think about it, though. What would a ballpark be like without the sound of the organ? Thank goodness for the Chicago Cubs, who instated it, we'll never have to know. That's right. The very first organ was played at Wrigley Field back on April 26, 1941. Roy Nelson, or Ray Nelson, its sources have it different, but played the organ while fans arrived for that afternoon's game against none other than Kelsey's Cardinals. And shall I mention the Cardinals did win the game.
So the Cardinals are part of this history too, is what you're telling me. Exactly. All right. I'm in. I'll stay.
John Benedek is a lifelong Cubs fan who grew up in the Northwest suburbs. He began playing the piano when he was 6 years old, taking lessons from a neighbor. He attended Western Illinois University, where he studied broadcast production and took on the role of PA announcer and organist for several varsity sports. Now he enjoys playing piano at weddings and bars. He leads worship at his church, and he is one of two esteemed organists at Wrigley Field. So, John, it is our great honor to welcome you to Babes, Babes, and thank you so much for sharing your time and your talent with us.
Anytime. I give you mad props for that Ray Nelson fact. Like, that takes some digging sometimes.
So. Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, so I wasn't sure because I was reading different, like, stories, if it was Ray or Roy. So it is Ray.
I'm almost positive it's Ray. I don't think I've ever read Roy. But if there is someone that says, I don't know. I know it happened one time, and then they stopped for a couple decades and then picked it up again in the 60s. But, yeah, Wrigley was the first, and it hopefully will be the last. So,
perfect. John, which suburb did you grow up in? Because I live in the Chicago area now.
Oh, McHenry.
Oh, okay. Cool. Way,
like about less than 10 miles from Wisconsin. I'm way up there.
Yeah. Nice. Lifelong Cubs fan. All right. Well, my mother, Kim Bird, shout out to Kim Bird, my Cubs fan mother. I'm sure she's going to be tuning in and excited. And I do have a lot of loving, wonderful family members who are Cubs fans. So,
and I Cardinals fans.
I would say I have more Cubs fans than I have like anything. So,
yeah, wow. It's like split right down the middle of my family. Much of my dad's mother's side is from Central Illinois, like Peoria,
Utah. Yeah, area. That's where I'm from, John. I grew up in Washington, Illinois, right outside of Peoria.
A wedding there a couple years ago. That's awesome. But yeah, no, Eureka is where my grandma's from, and everybody, her sisters, or they're all Cardinals fans. So reunions are interesting.
Yes, yeah. Then you know exactly what it's like. Like that area is where the line is at, right?
It's a bizarre kind of dynamic because anything south of 80, we consider Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
Instead of saying picture, they say pitcher.
Yeah.
it's a little different, but.
Oh, funny. Well, do you want to play us a little tune to kick us off tonight?
Yeah, prove it. Prove it, John.
I guess if it's here. Yeah, no, I usually, you know, when gates open, you know, it's like, you know, a couple hours before first pitch, I'll just kind of do an overture. And one of my favorites is a
amazing.
That was awesome.
Yes. Tempo. Thank you.
It's so cool to get to see you too. Like if for listeners who are watching on YouTube, or if you are listening, you can go watch on our YouTube channel at Babes Babes Podcast, because it's really cool to see you. I think it's so easy to take for granted when you come into the stadium and you just hear that like, it's not a track, it's you.
Yeah. A whole person behind there.
That's so cool.
Well, thanks. I get, that's one of the most common comments I get, when either someone looks at a video that I post on one of my socials, or they see the fact that there's an organ, like, oh my gosh, I thought that was like a pre-recorded thing, or a DJ was just pushing a button. And some ballparks, they do have that. And that's like part of their culture. I know, I think Pittsburgh, they just have a DJ and they play sound effects and that works for them. But places like Wrigley, where it started, or actually Busch Stadium, Jeremy Boyer and Dwayne Hilton, they actually play a Lowry too. These organs are something special. And but they get Jeremy and Dwayne, they work hard to make sure that it's engaging and creative, and things you wouldn't otherwise hear on a piano or an organ. Like, we try to play them. My counterpart, Josh, I actually can't mimic it because he has this whole thing set up differently at the one at Wrigley. He plays Genuine's Pony.
Oh my God.
And it's insane. I'm like, I don't know how he pulls it off, but it sounds ridiculous. And I'm like, it's the organ. It's like something so formal normally played, but then he throws in a 90s R&B hit. And yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Love that. I heard you over there playing John Fogerty.
Yeah.
Center field. That is one of my favorite songs.
Likewise. I'll open up a homestand with that one almost every time, just because it's worth it.
That'll get everybody going for sure.
Come on.
All right. Well, we have a whole slew of questions for you. We're like dying to dive in here. So I'll kick us off. So you started taking piano lessons when you were about 6 years old. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? Did you do you credit anyone for inspiring your love for music, or did you just kind of like discover it on your own?
Oh, where do I begin? So my parents were very adamant about throwing me into piano lessons. I don't know if they saw something or someone said like, hey, you should, because I wasn't interested. That wasn't on my mind. But as a 6 year old, you don't really have much say in what you do. You go to school, you go to bed when your parents say, you eat when your parents say, like, you're a kid. So they say, hey, John, you're going to take piano lessons with this person named Sally Mangtalo. And she lived a few blocks away. My cat is here. Hi, bud. How you doing?
I was going to say, is that a raccoon?
The amount of cats that have made an appearance on this podcast
he needs the. because we never give him attention. So
he's very welcome.
Yeah, no, he's fine. So Sally, she kind of introduced the piano to me, in a very formal sense. She was a Juilliard trained musician. She grew up on the North Shore, very very classically and Baroque style oriented. And I, you know, that's how I learned the basics and all the techniques and everything that goes with it. But throughout the first year, I got introduced to like Canon in D, which is, you know, that struck me. I'm like, oh, I want to learn that. And she told me, sorry. She told me, no, John, you're not quite ready yet, because I wasn't a very good practicer. I never practiced, and she knew that. And she, I think she must have saw this, like, aha, this will get him. So she's like, no, you can't do it. And I'm like, how dare you tell a 6-year-old what he can and can't do? And yeah, she was like, okay, if you practice 15 minutes a day, I think you can manage to learn this. And I ended up just kind of jumping into it with that mindset, just do 15 minutes. That's all you need to do. And throughout that process, when I started learning that, I started to pick up things with my ear, where I, you know, instead of like do, because I think I also was doing like, it's a Beethoven piece, but then I would mess with it. I would go, I'm like, oh, I can take what's already been written and change it up a bit and make it my own thing. And through that, I was like, oh, this note works with this one the same way it works with this one. And you start to notice relationships between notes, and you start making things up and writing things. And that's when it was off to the races. And so I credit her. It was her determination to get me to work hard and to learn the techniques and the historical figures like Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, and all those guys, but also gave me the leeway to be able to play what I wanted and create and make things and contribute to music. And from there, I just kind of did my own thing all the way through high school. And that was our deal. We'd play a classical piece as well as a piece that I make up for every recital. And then after high school, I kind of just did my own thing. So,
and remind me of her name.
Sally Mengtilo.
Only a Sally Mengtilo would train someone up to be the Wrigley Field organ. Like that name, I was like, that just
Sally
sounds
Mengtilo. Yeah, she's a peach, man. One of a kind.
So you realized even by 6 years old that you kind of had that, because that's a thing that you just have to like be able to kind of play by ear, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I can't take credit for it. That comes from somewhere else. But
yeah, so not only do I hate you because you're a Cubs fan, but also like I'm super jealous because you have that talent. Because my brother and my dad do, and I just don't.
On the air, did you hear that? She hates me. Nah.
I just met him like 5 minutes ago, and I'm just lashing out. But man.
I can't hold myself. No, it's fine.
You have like everything I want: a World Series title in the last decade, and. You can play music.
That's right. The Cardinals haven't won since what? 13?
11. They 11. Lost in 13.
Oh, that's right. The Red Sox won in 13.
Yeah, I had tickets to game 7 of that game. Didn't get to go because it didn't happen. But thank you for bringing that up, John. Back to you.
You brought the World Series. I don't know what to tell you. I'm just, this is the conversation. I'm just like, oh, she's talking about World Series. Let's continue that conversation.
Let's talk more about you, though.
Yes. We had a Houston Astros fan on a few weeks ago. So that was my chance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was my time with the floor to have that rivalry. So.
Yeah. So now Jana is here to mediate between us. Well,
I'm not doing a very good job.
I'll behave.
So as Jana mentioned in her intro, you attended college for broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Did you have plans of getting into sports broadcasting? Did you pursue that at all? Or what did that transition look like?
Sports broadcasting, not so much. So I had actually, like, out of high school, I was working at a community radio station in Huntley, where I was producing a slew of different shows. And it's kind of where I got my fix for producing things. I love the technical engineering side of sound. So I'm proficient in, you know, Audition and Logic and Pro Tools. Like I love doing that stuff as well as making the music, because I kind of wanted to blend it. I wanted to be able to produce my own music wherever I was, wherever my computer was. And Radio just seemed like an easy lane because it was an obvious track in college. It's not like music production. You can go a bunch of different directions, and it seems pretty niche. Like, it's not much for you as far as jobs. But radio and broadcasting and any sort of production, it seems like there's a plentiful amount of jobs and avenues you can go down with that. So I started interning at the station in Huntley, and I was at McHenry County College for a while, got my associates there, and then transferred to Western, where I did TV news and radio news. And I started, you know, doing the audio. I was the audio assistant for all the sports games. That was just the job I had. So I wasn't necessarily in the sports sector, but that was where my job was. I just did all the events, and I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. And from there, I got a job as the public address announcer. Because their guy, I think he was commuting from the Quad Cities, and he just was sick of driving that far. So I was like, I'll do it, because I already worked with him a bit, and he asked. So I did the basketball, volleyball, softball, and baseball. They had a guy for football, and I don't know the game very well. So it's like, I'll do the games that I know. I know volleyball, I know basketball, I know baseball. So that just made sense. But yeah, that's where I ended up going.
Did you ever hang with any of the musical theater kids at Western?
Nope.
Ever get involved in any of that?
No, and I should have. I think back, and I'm like, I minored in journalism. I'm like, okay. I was never gonna write. I'm a decent writer, but But I'm like, I had to choose a minor, and I'm thinking like, oh, I have to choose something that has to do with broadcasting.
Yeah.
Like, man, I should have done something in music. It's a minor, and it was in the building next door. I don't know, but I should have. I saw one of the musicals. It was, you know, I think it was derived from the same genre as Hamilton. It was called Bloody Buddy Andrew Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's nuts.
Like, yeah, it is. Bananas. It's a good one.
Yeah. And I'm like, these guys are good. Like they had some pipes. So I was like, it's good for them.
I want to see you two sing together because Kelsey has a theatrical background.
No way.
And I have a music degree.
Oh, there you go.
She's not musically talented, but she is
not working in music. Well, not currently, but you know how that goes.
I'm not in broadcasting. We're fine.
Right.
So cool. Well, so when did you deviate from that plan then that like you decided music was your path? Mm. Like, so that was that kind of always the plan, or somewhere along there you're like, yeah, I think I'm going to pursue music full time.
Well, I graduated and I got a degree, and I started working in radio. I was at an AM station in the city just as a producer, and it was part-time and then full-time. So that was what was paying the bills. I still had music stuff on the side. I was still playing in places. But it was never my intention to pursue it full-time. And it still kind of isn't. Cause like this is a per diem situation. This is like the Cubs pay me for what I do. That's it. And that's all they need to do because they let me create, they let me do things, you know, at my own speed, and they like what I do. So they pay me for that. I do a slew of other things to fill in the gaps. And, but after I started working with a guy named Stu McVicker, He's like the picture a Cubs fan and then multiply it by 10 and you still probably haven't touched the caliber of who Stu McVicker is. Wow. So he decided to trick out his basement with like all this like stuff you see up here, like Cubs memorabilia and the stuff he has Kerry Wood's locker.
Oh my gosh.
That's a life-size bobblehead of Rizzo.
Oh my gosh.
Rizzo's mine now.
Yeah, yeah. He's not doing as good as he was in the Cubs, but
I know.
it caught the attention of some people because he just initially did this whole thing in his basement to have a fun place to watch Cubs games with his buds. And it caught the attention of Tom Ricketts, the owner of the Cubs. And he ended up coming out there, and this was like 2014. He's like, hey, if we win the World Series, I'm bringing the trophy here. And one thing led to another, and he did. And he's like, he kind of got this idea. I'm like, man, if it's catching the attention of all these players and Cubs figures, I can sell tickets to come here and open up a not-for-profit where we just give all the money to a charity. And that's what he's done for the last 10 years.
Wow.
He's raised almost $1 million out of his basement.
Oh my gosh. How cool.
His basement. I know. Like it's insane. And that's actually where, you know, he met me because I was a freelancer for producing podcasts like what you guys are doing. And he wanted to make a podcast for these events.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of got into the circle of people in the Cubs organization. And he, of the crazy things he has in his basement, he has a organ that was at Wrigley just down there. And
wow.
No one was playing it. And I'm a pianist only for like ever. And I saw it. I'm like, oh, it's kind of like a piano. It's got the same keys. I can make it work. And he's like, dude, fine. No one's playing it. And I'm like, great. So at these events, I would turn it on and do like a, just play that. And people got a key. They're like, yeah, this is so cool. And one day someone caught me on and put it up and it went viral and threw my hat in the ring without me knowing. And that's how.
What
I got in, yeah.
So you just get like a call or something like, hey, you want to come play?
A slew of emails, but the year he retired, yeah. And I didn't realize it was still a vacancy, but yeah, someone threw my hat in the ring and they ended up reaching out. And I did my auditions on that organ that was at Wrigley, so no big deal. And ended up after, you know, it was like 5 days before the world shut down in 2020, they gave it to me.
Of course.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that was a great year, right?
Yeah. So what did you play for your audition?
Center field was one of them. And then they would send me, they sent me a couple of prompts to like, hey, what would you do in this situation? So one of them was like a video review. So
yeah, I know what that is. Video like, killed the radio star, right?
Radio star, or what was another one? I'm trying to think of the prompts they sent me.
So it was just prompts, and they wanted to see what you would come up with from that.
Yeah, they said, it was play a baseball theme song. So I did center field, and it was play a pop song. So as I think I did. So that was just one. Oh, that's a fun song. I could probably play that. And I still play all this stuff. Like I added it to my catalog.
Yeah.
And then it was just it very quickly went from, I have nothing to lose because it's just like a fun audition, whatever.
Right.
To, oh my gosh, this actually might happen because they keep calling me. And I'm like, I had this like, I don't know. It was sort of imposter syndrome.
Sure.
I had been playing organ only as long as I had known the job had been available.
Right.
Because I played piano my whole life. And then this is like a new kind of, it's a different beast. It's not any more difficult or less difficult. It's just different. And you got to, the biggest thing is the feet. You got all these pedals down there. But Josh, my counterpart, like he's like a seasoned vet on organ. Like he's insane. And like, I show up and I'm playing and I see him play stuff and he know, like I've talked with him like how this dynamic and I'm honest about it. It's like sometimes I feel like I don't know why they pick me, but it's an intrusive thought that like I rebuke every time it comes to my head and I'm just like John stop, like they keep bringing you back for a reason. You belong here. You could be humble about it, and that's another thing I really got to work on. But it's like, it's still like I wasn't an organist my whole life, and then this is the culmination of it. Like some of these athletes who've been working their whole life to get there, but you know, I'm there for a reason. So
absolutely. Well, I just remember hearing you at the College World Series and was like, oh my god! And then someone was like, this is the Cubs organist. I'm like, what? I didn't know that at the time, but
I can't believe. You saw me on the elevator with a plate full of food, didn't say anything.
I knew who he was and you didn't
say. Yes, I knew who he was.
Oh, you were probably texting me.
I probably was.
What the heck, man? But
remember we like We had to share that elevator, and it would take forever because it's the same elevator that all the like the media people shared, yeah. and you shared, the and then
box people, like it's the same.
Yeah,
it's just like
all the box.
Oh man. And like they tried to make it where they would designate, like if you had a pass, you'd be like, okay, we got to expedite this and get them upstairs because they got to work. But then they would have, what is that?
What? Did you do that? Or did I do that? That is the, I don't know. That's like God saying that.
I'm not sure. I guess you just hit a home run.
I'm a winner.
This podcast is a home run. Fireworks.
Yay. Like. But sorry,
I have no idea where that came from.
Did you touch? My hands are 5 feet away from the keyboard. But they tried to expedite like getting up, but like they would always have somebody who, you know, played the "Do you know who I am?" game, and I'm standing there in line. I'm like, I gotta start in 5 minutes. I'll just take the stairs, and I got my steps in, but.
Yeah, I almost always took the stairs because of that same thing. But it was so cute. They had these little old people that would sit up. Their job was literally just to sit on the elevator and like push the button for us.
They did a great job.
They have that at Busch Stadium too, where they have people manning the elevators like that.
Like I would get sick, like motion sick if that's all I did all day.
Oh man.
Well, I love that story, John, because a lot of the times the coolest opportunities come out of, I mean, that's when it's the best, right? Is when they come out of such an organic thing like that. That's a very cool story.
Well, thanks.
So this is kind of random, but has the pitch clock affected like how you do your thing this past season?
You know what? We thought it would, and it really hasn't. It's already kind of like a hurry up and wait type of game. And there's always like, we don't play any differently. There may be some moments where you just play a little less, but most of the time the ump is kind of like football where they have the running clock and then they'll signal the clock and we could see the big, but like during the game, you don't really notice it, but you know, before you know it, by the end of the game, it's like, oh, this game was 25 minutes shorter than it usually is.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I got paid the same. So fine. Right.
We all thought it was going to be like day one, like opening day. We're all like, we got to really pay attention. And I'm like, I didn't notice any difference like at all, but
crazy.
I think they did it, perfectly for the first, like, because usually when like there's a big rule change, it feels like a big shakeup.
Yeah.
And you know, this one, it was like when they put you could say what you want about the man on second or whatever, and like that was, whether you like it or not, it was a little bit more, it seems a bit more drastic than this. Seems like it.
Sure. Because
I mean, but I think this helps with the scheduling and making sure that you know, either people aren't being overserved or whatever, you know, like there's a whole slew of reasons why they could have done this, but you don't notice it if you don't think about it.
So obviously a lot of the time that we hear you is during things like a mound visit or a pitching change. Do you have like your go-to little ditties that you like to play during those times?
That's a good question. I have a few for each sort of situation. So mound visits, I like to do, so that's for like ours.
Oh. Yeah, I've definitely heard that one a time or two, Wrigley.
Yeah, so there's a few, because you know, normally there's a few mound visits during a game. The other team, like if they're getting visited, usually it has to do with like a very high pressure situation. So I'll do a. Under pressure. But I mean, there are also other situations where the DJ takes over. Usually when it's an opposing pitching change, they'll play, either hit the road jack or take me out or something.
Oh yeah.
Has to do with like, but our pitcher, and this is most of Cubs players have their own theme song, their own walk-up song. And so I don't play for any of our own walk-ups or anything, but like our pitcher comes out, we play his song.
Would you, if we got one of the Cubs players to request an organ walk-up song, would you do it?
Yeah, that will probably never happen.
Okay, I'm gonna make it my mission. We'll see who I can connect with.
Like, seriously.
Dansby, if you're listening. John wants to play just for you.
I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I'm like, this is the best thing ever, but
yeah. They're always looking to get creative, you know, do something different. So yeah, right?
They're all about setting trends, and it's like, this is the trendiest thing. Like,
you know, maybe we shouldn't start that trend.
80-year long
trend. Gets on it, trend. Working 10 times as much.
I don't care. I'll do whatever.
So, okay. I've been told that you like to play on certain teams, opposing teams, like names.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? And if it is, what is the best that you've come up with?
So I need to say that I am not the first to do this by any means.
Of course not.
No. Nancy Faust, who was the organist for the White Sox for like 45 years, she used to do this for a bunch of people. Matthew Kaminsky down at the Braves, he's notorious for doing it. And I think like he's like the modern epitome of that sort of sarcastic, playful nature of the organ. He does it for like every player. He doesn't just select few. He like will go through the roster, throw it up on Twitter and be like, what do you guys got? And people will throw their suggestions in there. And for every single player on every single team that the Braves play, he plays it. So I stole that immediately. I'm like, that is the best thing, I think. So anytime the Cardinals come to town, he's not on the Cardinals anymore. He's actually a Yankee, Harrison Bader. I'm like, oh, Bader. Yeah. So, or Tommy Edman. I can imagine he loves that. Like a depressing song about a shipwreck. That's a great motivator. But yeah, there's, they just can go on and on. Let me think. Oh, Jazz Chisholm. But yeah, musical theater.
I love it.
Yeah. I love that too, because it makes people like more engaged with the game, because, you know, like one in every 12 people probably catches on to that, but then it's they're like, hey, did you hear that? Oh my gosh, it's so clever.
Person is like, yeah. And I'm like, that's enough. That's for you. I don't care about the other 40,000. That's for you.
I have been that person at the game before that's like, did you just hear that? That was so clever. So I know that it is an exciting point of conversation, at least for us musical theater nerds, if nothing else.
That's actually very reassuring. Thank you. Because I'm in my little glass bubble up there, and then I leave.
Yeah.
I don't hand out surveys to the
right.
Like, hey, you know, what did you think of this? Like I have to meter it and like, you know, follow either socials to see if people are just like tweeting it out or something. Or I ask my colleagues and my boss and other people that are like around me. I'm like, what did you think of that? Like I'm such an affirmation. Like, give me feedback. Give me either positive, negative, whatever you got, just tell me how I'm doing.
Yeah.
I kind of thrive on that. Cause I'm like,
that's how I am too.
Yeah. I think that's very much a performance-based thing. You want some kind of feedback.
Little people pleasy, but I mean, you got to please people if you're performing.
For sure.
Yeah. So.
Well, you've been a baseball fan your whole life, right? So the other thing that I'm thinking is like, you are up there, I guess maybe it helps that you're in your own little world, but is it difficult to stay focused on the job at hand and not get really into the game?
No, I think it, because I see this as my cheerleading.
Yeah.
I can, if I simply react the way I would as a baseball fan, but I just translate my cursing and shaking my fist or cheering to playing something on the organ to just accompany everybody else. I like to tell people who ask, like, I'm not a performer, I'm a reactor. Like that's the mindset I'm in when I'm doing this. And it's actually kind of enhanced my love for for baseball in a way where I can marry the two things I love the most hobby wise, music and baseball. And now, like, the only place you can do that is either at a hockey arena or at a ball field. And what better place to do it than there? So that's only helped. And I have to catch myself from getting complacent, I think, where it's just kind of, I get in the motion and I'm not present in the moment. I'm not innovating, because after, like, you know, like a 6 or 7 game homestand where you're just there every day, you can get just kind of in this one track mind and you're like, dude, like, do your job, like, be creative. You got to just take a step back and look around, take a walk or whatever you got to do before the game to get back in the creative headspace, because you got to be on your toes the whole game. Otherwise, it's pretty easy just to sit there.
Oh, for sure. I mean, especially in, you know, like a 3 or 4 game series, you're like, did I play this today for Jazz Chisholm today or was that yesterday? Like, it's probably hard to keep track of it.
Some things you do repeat. Like, you, I always play. There's like similar, like a... Like, this type of stuff is kind of expected during the game. So there are certain things you can repeat, but you do want to bring something new. In the overture, like the songs I'm playing prior to first pitch, I just play stuff like center field and favorites. If it's a patriotic day, I'll play some patriotic music. If it's like, I look at, like, on this day in history, like if an actor passed away certain decades ago or whatever, I'll be like, oh, I'll play that movie theme. Or just like, you try to think of new things to bring, but
that's brilliant.
It takes a bit. It takes a lot of thought.
Yeah,
for sure.
I got to make sure I just keep that effort proactive.
I think that's
a respect.
Yeah, that's a good call out too. That, like, you are a reactor, because as a performer in a lot of other scenarios, which I'm sure you're also familiar with, you are the one that's like invoking the emotion a lot of the time or trying to get the reaction out of someone else. Yes. But for you to recognize and kind of put that word to it is really cool, that in this scenario, you are enhancing the emotions and kind of making people even feel like they're in, you know, a heightened scenario with your creativity. So that's awesome.
And then I'm with them. I'm not just pushing a button. It's in the other benefit of having someone live at the keys, and like, I'm the only place where playing by ear really works is either in this scenario or like improv piano where you just play something. So one of the ones, I don't know how familiar with Jackson Browne you are, and it came to me because I knew this song from a while back, but Morel this season, I think he was playing third this game. And he caught a one hopper rope to him, and it kicked up dirt in his face, and it hit his eye. And they stopped the game for the trainer to go out and wipe his eye. So I was I got the producer in the headset going like, hey, can you give me some organ here, organ fill? And I'm like, I got to play something. And I just was playing chords, and usually I do that to think of what I'm gonna play.
Yeah.
Like, I fake it, but then I was like, oh. Song is called Doctor My Eyes.
Oh my gosh,
that song from years ago, because my dad loves Jackson Browne, and they run on Empty a lot, so which is a very popular Jackson Browne song. But just like oh, that was one that just works across the board, because you can loop it, you can play it for as long as you need to. Certain people know it makes sense in this very specific situation,
and
I don't get all these softballs all the time. Like it almost never. But when I do, like, that's one of those moments where it's like, you gotta be sharp. You gotta be willing to take some risks and think like, oh, did the song work? Sometimes I have bomb songs. Oh my gosh. I remember I was doing, Born to Run, just the beginning. Like I can do the, dun, 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 dun. And like that big part that goes, dun, dun, dun. It walks up and I didn't do that at all. I completely forgot it. I'm like, that's like the best part of the song, and I totally missed it. And I'm like banking that like there isn't some like Springsteen savant.
Yeah.
I'm like, and there was. And they came through, they're like, hey, you know, great choice. I love that song. I don't, did you just like stop it midway through? And I had to be like, yeah, totally. I just I was running out of time. I didn't totally just forget half the song. Yeah, in general.
But no, but like, I'm just sitting here trying to picture like the mental capacity that it takes to not only like be able to think on your feet, like think of what song you're going to play, but also remember how the song goes and like just to be able, and you're just playing it off of like sound, like no notes, nothing.
No. And I envy, and I'll, this is, I envy people who can just throw a piece of music down in front of them and play it. Cause I know what the, like, I look up and like, I know what those notes are, but to be able to just like throw it down and play is, I can't even come close to that. I say like, be like, can you read music? I'm like, yeah, but it's like a third grade reading level. Like I can read it, but it takes a bit. But when I discovered I could do the thing by ear, it just made it so much quicker and it widened what is available to play.
We're absolutely
like, I've done weddings where someone's like, do you know this Slayer song? And I'm like, well, we'll just have to find out, won't we? And you know, you just got to try to sell it, but there's no Slayer sheet music available,
right?
You can find it on Spotify and YouTube and stuff, and like those have been my best friends where someone requests something mid-game and you just mute the organ and you can figure it out that ending. I'm like, this skill or whatever I got works for this perfectly. And that's what I've been most grateful for, is I don't know where it came from. And I Jesus put me here for a reason. So it's like there's a reason why I have that skill. And if it's to bring joy to people, then great. So,
yeah, no, that's, I am so jealous, envious. Don't be. I'm in awe.
But we've been over that. I'm going to try not to get upset again.
We all have a gift, and you know, it's not up to us to like to look at somebody and be like, oh, I wish I had that gift. You can look at that and admire it, but like, yeah, knowing what Jonna, what Kelsey, what anyone, what you guys are on earth for, and becoming as comfortable and as skilled and as whatever in it as possible is I think the most actualized you could be as a person. So
yeah,
keep doing what you're doing, because you guys are also great. So
thank you so much.
Thanks, John. You can stay.
Even if you like the Cardinals.
So I'm going to detour us back to the College World Series. We talked about how you played there. This last year was your first year being invited to do that.
Yep.
So what we didn't talk about is, are you coming back this year?
Maybe.
Wait to see, a little inside scoop.
It is in the works. So yes, I will say confidently that I will be there. That organ is a different animal.
Really?
Oh yeah. So the Lowry's, like what I'm playing here, like you heard all the rhythms and the instruments and everything that are in the background. It does a lot of work for you if you want it to. And you can also, you know, turn everything off and make it like a theater organ, like at United Center. Oh, wait, there we go. You can make it do beastly things. That organ that's at the Chuck Box is 77 years old.
No. Yeah.
It came from Rosenblatt. It came from the OG Stadium.
Wow. And
they fixed it up. I was actually with the guy last week who like renovated it and everything. It was pretty interesting. But it's an old Hammond CV, I think is what they call it, based on the C2, which is like what you hear in all like the old Doors rock songs from the 60s. Like everyone had a Hammond, and the way it starts up. And if you want, like if you're there in June, like how it starts up is like starting up an old Ford. Like push the starting motor and you hear the tone wheels go, and you're just holding it for like 15 seconds and then you push run and then it's running. And I'm like, this is so old school. And it just is tones. It sounds a lot like this. Like it's very Hammondy, and you can, but That was sort of my tone I had there, but you do everything. I got my feet moving, my left hand on the lower manual, and it just, it, man, it's a workout. Like I can sit and play this for hours and not feel anything, but when you're moving your feet for every single song for an hour, it's like,
I couldn't imagine doing this, like, if this was everywhere every day, but
And you're the only one that comes to the College World Series, so you're there for, like, 10 days, just you.
2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I play a minimum of 14 games, and it's all those doubles.
Unbelievable.
You should wear a step tracker. Let us know what comes out.
I might. I'll get an Apple Watch just for that purpose.
Yeah.
And I'll strap it to my ankle and just see what happens.
Yes.
But...
Well, we're going to have to meet in person when you come to Omaha this summer.
For sure. Yeah. No, that's, I had more fun than I thought it would. I think it was like, there's something about college sports that I love, and I got it. Like Western has its own, like there's the women's basketball team. They were really good. They were Summit League champs. They made it to the dance a couple of times when I was there. So they were like really good. And they, like when they got a bunch of people in that stadium, it was actually pretty rocking. But for most of the sports, there's pretty modest crowds. It wasn't like that college sports feel. The first time I ever got that sort of experience was my sister's. She's a PhD student at Michigan, and they have the biggest stadium in the Western Hemisphere over there. Just so happened. And I'm like, oh, dude, let's go to a Michigan Illinois game, and we went. And I'm like, I couldn't believe what 100,000 people looks like. And I didn't expect that. So that was insane. But then coming to the College World Series and seeing LSU fans and Wake Forest and TCU, like these crazy diehard fans of these, I mean, you just can't quite grasp it until you see it. And I'm like, it's a way of life to these people. And that was always, every day was something new and interesting, and high energy is an understatement.
It was wild when I was like walking through the, because I don't know about, did you drive or fly?
I flew. Or I drove.
Okay.
I flew down 80, meaning, but I was driving a car.
So we had our like assigned parking there. Yeah. And every day, like people would be out there tailgating. And my favorite thing that I saw in there was LSU fans were grilling an alligator. Like, which was like the best, because they ended up playing Florida in the championship.
Because why would just like, they be grilling an alligator?
Right, exactly. Oh my gosh. Like those people are just a different breed.
Anytime as an SEC team, or like I heard stories of the year Ole Miss and Mississippi State were there and they faced each other, like there was standing room only, maybe a couple $100,000 in damages around town. Like it just was insane, but that's just how it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I love it. It's definitely infectious, and I look forward to it again, because I can imagine LSU is probably going to make it again.
Oh yeah, for sure. So. Kelsey, you're going to have to come take it in.
I have never been to Nebraska, so it's just another state to check off my list.
It's barely Nebraska.
If John can drive there, surely I can too. We're
8 hours.
It's
a day trip. Yeah.
Well, speaking of crazy fans, crazy fan bases, you have always been a Cubs fan. Yep. So did you grow up going to Wrigley a lot? And like, who is your favorite Cubs player of all time?
Oh, good questions. Yes, I grew up going to Wrigley. We actually saw, up until I was like in eighth grade, I saw a lot more games up in Milwaukee. Just because it was easier to park and it's probably a little less expensive.
I live like 5 miles, I think, from Wrigley Field, and I live 85 miles from American Family Field, and it takes me the same amount of time to get to each and park inside. I swear to you.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right.
The same. So I am the same these days.
That's funny. Miller Park, it's interesting. Like, I still call it Miller, but yeah, American Family. It's interesting ballpark with the roof and everything, but I still feel like you're watching a ballpark in a shopping mall or something. It doesn't have the atmosphere that Wrigley or the places that are like the New Bush Stadium.
I like it. I think it's a nice place to watch a ball game, but it's built, it's purpose built to see a ball game outside. And yes, that's the only criteria I think you should have. Unless you're in Arizona when it's 130 degrees in August. Like, yeah, throw a roof on that bad boy. That's ridiculous. Yeah. No one should be able to. And then Dallas just built their new one. It gets really hot in Dallas. Florida.
Well, have you been to Wrigley though? Cause I have when it's like 20 yeah. degrees in April.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm guessing that happens up in Milwaukee even more.
Oh yeah. No, well, at least when we have a flyover, we have the roof open and you can
That is true.
No, but yeah, no, it does get cold. And, but like Cubs fans, we know it's not like we're new here.
Right. Yeah, like, fair.
You wear a coat. Get a hot coat or get a spiked hot side or whatever, you know, like warm yourself up. During the summer, drink water. It's hot. The seasons have never, there's always been seasons for all of recorded history. Why are we surprised when it's hot in July and cold in early April, late March? Like that's the way it's going to be, but we got to play this game because it's their job. And if you're going to watch it, you pay the ticket. You just know what to expect, man.
And some of us are crazy enough that we'll sit through anything for it.
100%. I was at the game in 2018 when they were facing the Braves and they were down by 13 and came back and won. It was one of the first home games of this. I think it had to be the second week of April. It was 22 degrees with the wind. And I was with a bunch of people who didn't care about baseball and one Cardinal fan, because those people from school. And every inning, they were like, John, can we go? John, can we go? John, can we go? And every answer was, no, I bought the tickets. No, I bought the tickets. No, I bought the tickets. And they stayed with me. And I think Matt Nagy, the Bears head coach, was new at the time. He sang the stretch. And then they came back and won it. It was
so worth it.
15 people left in the stadium, but it was awesome. Yeah. Good stuff. Oops.
Well, I asked you too many other questions in between there, but who is your favorite Cubs player of all time?
That's tough. I mean, Sosa is who got me into like loving baseball. You can't hate, but I wouldn't know if I would put him as my favorite.
Who are you really enjoying watching like right now? Ooh. Anyone in particular?
Yeah, Justin Steele, man. He is putting on a show, and he's doing it like old school.
Yeah.
He's such an unproblematic, no drama, but he gets up there and he can dominate anybody. And it, like up until that last month, he was looking like the front runner for that Cy Young, and he's killing it. Yeah. They ought to keep him. He's another John Lester, because he's consistent. You know that you're going to get a quality 5-6 innings from him every game. I love Christopher Morel. I think he's the best. I've seen videos of him down in Puerto Rico like this week, and they're doing a baseball event. I forget what it's called, but like a baseball event where it's super popular, and he's staying after the game for hours taking pictures and signing autographs. I met him at an event at Stu's house a couple years ago. No, last year, early last year. And I introduced myself, and he's a translator. So my buddy Miguel, he's the Spanish-speaking radio host. He was the translator. And I introduced, hey, I'm John, I'm the organist, and they translated. And he looks over at me. He's like, oh, you're... I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, he's like miming the ball boy running after a foul ball back to the screen. And yeah. Sprint, and I do. And he's like, do you do that? I'm like, yes!
Aww.
I'm like, a player noticed during the game when I play. That's all I need. I don't care what anyone else tells me. Good job, John. The fact that Christopher Morel during a game noticed that reference.
Yeah.
The guy running. Oh.
That's everything.
I went into like a bathroom. I was like, oh, my
God. I love that. Christopher Morel, definitely. Like, I love his energy. I am glad to hear that it sounds like he is the same in person as he comes off.
Exactly who he is like on TV, and all the perceptions is how he is in person. Yeah, he's awesome.
Very cool.
And I know that you've met Fergie Jenkins, yes. And oh my gosh, he is one of my favorite people.
He's epic. He's awesome. So I met
everywhere too.
Yes. Oh yeah. He has his cigars and everything, and so like you'll see him like with Mike Ditka, and like, oh, okay, Mike Ditka cigar, just like all these different people, and it's wild. But the first time I met him, again, I'll keep bringing back Club 400 because that's where else would I meet players. This is actually before the Oregon thing ever happened. I was actually just in charge of recording all the equipment, and I was there early. And he shows up early to every event, no matter what event. That's Fergie. He just shows up, and it's just me, him, and his handler sitting at Stu's bar in his basement, and he's casually telling me about, oh, you know, I've pitched 12 innings like 18 times. You know, I'm looking at top 10 pitcher all time. Like, that's who Fergie is, and he's just sitting in the basement drinking a beer with me. I was like, this is crazy. It's insane.
But he's awesome. A special person for sure. So that's really cool. Well, while we're on the topic of you growing up a huge Cubs fan, were you able to attend the 2016 World Series?
No.
You didn't have $2,000 to spend on a ticket? Me neither.
I saw a lot of games, like regular season games that year. So, you know, you got to see that level of playing and you got to experience it. But, you know, I was at school. They were expensive.
I'm not
the kind of guy to shell out, you know, a mortgage payment on a ticket. It just, I could tell you what exactly I was doing for each game, but like the ones that stick out, I was the parabolic mic operator for a football game for ESPN. That was what I was doing that weekend during game six of the championship series against the Dodgers. So I was like, I'm going to miss pretty much all this game. So I had the producer in one ear and then my earbuds in the other with the broadcast. So I was listening to the Cubs game while I was getting paid to do something totally different. But at the end of that game, the football game ended pretty quickly and I'm like, oh sweet. I can just strike and I can head back to my apartment and catch the tail end of this game and see them win it or whatever, because they were already winning. Thumbs up.
That's awesome. Does it do that for me?
I don't know. Your computer,
what is up
saying that you need words of affirmation and it's just giving you real time feedback?
It's magic.
Yeah.
Your mind doesn't like me that much.
No.
To people who are just listening, I apologize. Because this is just,
optics going on.
Because I just see things. I'm like, I don't know. I'm not doing that. But so for game six, I had a guy who was working, who's supposed to be keeping my cables all in order so that by the end of the game they're not like a total rat's nest. It was like 2,000 feet of cable that I was attached to because it goes straight to the truck, and I'm not like during the game I'm not really looking behind me, and because I'm focused on my one thing, I'm focused on two things, but focus on one thing. And at the end of the game I'm like, great, it's pretty quick, and I turn around and the guy is nowhere to be seen. My gripper is nowhere to be found, and I'm looking down at just knots upon knots upon knots upon knots. I spent 2 hours unknotting that cable and I missed the rest of that game. And the stadium at Western's very small compared to others. And my buddy is taking down the stuff in the booth and I'm just yelling up at him, can you just scream updates at me? Cause I got to take this. So he's screaming like it's 4-0. Oh, they took Hendricks out. He pitched good. They're bringing in Strope. They're bringing in like he's all this stuff. And they're bringing in Chapman. I'm like, oh, this is it. And then he said they want it, and I'm like, great, thanks, man. Doing this, and they go home and watch the highlights. But I'm like, okay, we're in the series. That's great. That's cool. And it looked like the Cubs weren't going to do it. And then one thing led to another. They're in Game Seven, and I'm in a house full of Cardinals fans. Naturally. I had no other place to watch it, and everyone's, you know, typical Cardinal fan behavior, wearing their Molina shirts even when they're not in the playoffs. And
I actually moved to Chicago in in 2016 and I actually in 2015, but I was living in an apartment like right off of Lakeshore Drive, a half a mile from Wrigley Field in 2016. And
belly of the beast.
It was, I was right in the middle of it.
Like salt on the wound.
So yeah, we all had to work through it one way or another.
That's fine. You'll get back there eventually. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, John, as a fellow performer, I got to know, like, obviously you play out for other events too, like Jonna mentioned, weddings, bars, all that good stuff. Do you have a certain type of event that you enjoy playing more than others, or any fun gig story you want to share with us?
I love weddings, and I love the ceremony side. I'm sort of a sap. Like, the receptions are always fun because it's the party, but like, When you're the soundtrack or the accompanist, the butter on top of, you know, whatever is going on. And this is like, no one's upset. No one is, it's like the happiest time for these people, ideally. And you worked with them at least, you know, developing their routine and talking about what songs and why. They always share their stories as to why. I talked to these people yesterday for a wedding they're having in June, and wow, and they're like, you know, Ben Platt was their first concert together, and he proposed to her with this song or whatever, and so I'm playing that as she's walking down. I'm like, see, now anytime I'm playing this, I'm thinking of like how much even this song means something different to somebody else, but to these people, like this legitimately means something, and I get to contribute that to their situation. Not that you can't do that at other events, like other parties, you can play certain things, and a bar, if you play someone's request, maybe that meant something like that to them there. But I know at a wedding, it's specifically catered for this moment for these people, and I love that. I get a kick out of that. I wish I could do that every weekend. I really do.
Yeah. Is there anywhere else that you play? Like, do you do piano bars or anything else regularly right now other than Wrigley?
No. I'm a photographer too, so I do freelance that.
And he has visual and audio creative talent. This is so unfair.
Jack of all trades, master of none. Come on now. I do like a slew of all. I've done everything from the radio production. I was in digital marketing for a year. I did commercial flooring because I had to pay bills. And it's just like right at this moment in my life, and I'm like, dude, I just need two things. Give me two. I'll three jobs. I can handle three. Give me three. And I can make that work forever, but it's just like, I'm still trying to find it, but it just seems like music keeps beckoning me back. Like, come on, John, like you're halfway decent at it. Go full force.
Yeah.
Do it. And I'm like,
oh. I think that's an important thing to highlight though. When we have these kind of conversations, we had a TV producer and now like digital content.
Yeah.
A contributor and producer on just last week. And similarly, I mean, anyone who is working in entertainment or any kind of creative profession, that is the way that it is. It ebbs and flows, and you've got to be willing and ready to adapt with it and just have a certain type of personality that makes you built for it as well as having the talent for it. So I think it's really cool to highlight that part of it as well.
Yeah, no, you nailed it. Like being adaptable and understanding and preparing yourself that not only will the industry change, but you will probably have five or six different careers and just being ready to take it. You know, I've had moments where I was super prepared. Other moments where I'm like, I had no idea this was coming and it hit me like a truck and I'm paying for it. And it's like, I think figuring it out and being a master, not of just like skills, but like a master of, preparedness and ingenuity and being financially savvy, like all these things that just to survive and hopefully thrive in it as well. But yeah, no, it takes a certain mind or a certain sort of person to thrive in it. But yeah,
absolutely.
So cool. Well, what are you most looking forward to in this next season?
Oh man. I really like, the Cubs Productions team that I work with. I'm sort of on that same genre of, or like the aspect of the ballpark that where it's all the visuals, everything you see and hear when you're at the game. Those are the people I work with. I'm a part of that. So all the directors and the graphics people and the video creators, the camera ops, they're all just awesome. I really like that compatibility. I am looking forward to the quality of baseball because the Cubs sort of killed it this year. And I'm like, dude, they're just going to get better. And it draws people in. And I don't think there's a better place to watch a full house ball game than Wrigley. But others can have different opinions. It's fine.
Hey, I throw no shade at Wrigley Field. I have definitely been there more in my adult life than I have been to Busch Stadium, and I have a great time every time I'm there. As an adult,
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, Jonna is going to be paying us a visit here in Chicago, and obviously, like, I can tell her what I like about it, but I have only lived here as an adult. You have lived in this area your whole life, so do you have any particular recommendations for her? You're coming like the week between Christmas and New Year's, right? So
yeah,
anything
holiday.
Yeah. Oh well, I mean, the Chris Kindle Market and the Wonderland is going on right now. Where there's a few places around the city where they have the German Christmas market, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the unique to Chicago. Chicago does a very good version of it, but the unique thing is Wrigley started doing it, and they have like if Wrigley Field's got their own little park. It's called Gallagher Way, their own little grassy area where they set up they have a Ferris wheel, a Christmas tree, and all the shops and everything. But then they have what's called Wonderland, where they totally decked out the actual field in Wrigley Field with a lodge, rides.
Oh, I didn't know this.
It's insane.
Oh, like my God. Because
you're walking, like the lodge is in left field. So like you're having a spark cider where Soriano and Schwarber played,
right?
It's on the field, and like you get that perspective of looking up at the grandstand, and you can turn around and see the scoreboard, and I'm like, you're on the field.
Wow.
It's $10.
They didn't have that the last time I went, like a few years ago.
Yeah, they did last year, and it's worth it. Probably will be crowded because if you're going between Christmas and New Year's, yeah, but it's worth it. It's okay. Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Cause I can kind of kill two birds with one stone, like be standing in Wrigley Field, but also be taking in all the holiday stuff. So that's the perfect recommendation for me.
Thank you.
Super cute. And they have so many fun little like trinkets and souvenirs that you can, you know, just have a little something from your time there too.
You get the hard cider. They give you like a custom mug.
The collectible mug.
Your mug. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. I think I have mine upstairs, but
that's perfect. Thank you.
You got to do that. And now I'm going to have to take my mom there too. Now that she knows, we went together a few years ago, but we couldn't get on the field then.
Yeah, no, it was just outside the ballpark, but they did this whole thing where it's a whole different experience where they got rides for kids and an ice rink. I forgot to say it was an ice rink on Wrigley Field. I feel like ice skating. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yes. Yeah.
John, do you have a favorite type of deep dish pizza?
Dude, the meaty legend at Gino's East.
Gino's East, okay.
Yeah, I think Gino's East does the best deep dish. I think Uno is the original. Giordano's is overrated. Lou Malnati's is okay. But I think Gino's, like, you got to go to the one on Superior in River North. That's the original.
You're probably staying somewhere down around there too, Jonna. So Gino's East.
Do you like Thai food?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Star Siam on Illinois Street is my favorite place down there.
Okay.
The Illinois and State. So like a block and a half away from House of Blues in Chicago. Perfect. But like cheap, pretty inexpensive.
I'm Googling.
Yeah. That it's good to get those recommendations too, because in any city, but especially a place like Chicago, there's so many places that it's like overwhelming if you just try to Google.
Really easily in the city.
Never know like what's actually authentic. That's the problem I always run into in New York too. Like I never really know what's like actually authentic.
It might be pretty like cliche to say, oh yeah, gotta go to Gino's East. Cause it could be a tourist trap, but this one really isn't. The pizza grinder in Old Town up on Broadway is pretty good. That's another good pizza place. That's not really tourist trappy. It's actually pretty boutique. And that's a really nice part of town. Old Town is great. Mm-hmm. Like Linkin Park, that area too. Like, it's all awesome. See a comedy show at Zany's if you can. It's pretty inexpensive, and it's like you're 10 feet from a stage, and some pretty decent. I was there, like Jimmy Fallon came through one time, and it's just
no way.
Yeah. Like, it's actually pretty, it's not like Second City or like the Ming theaters. It's just, it's little, this little comedy club. That's awesome.
Okay. That's perfect.
Well, John, thank you so much for sharing your time and your talents with us tonight. It was really cool to get to know more about you and about what you do and get a like full on sneak peek behind the scenes of the magic that is happening every game at Wrigley Field. Will you tell our listeners where they can follow you and find you on social media?
Sure. Twitter is just my name, at John Benedek, as you see on the screen, or it's J-O-H-N-B-E-N-E-D-E-C-K. And then Instagram is just.johnb, John with an H. And then TikTok, Johnny B on the keys.
Oh, you're way cooler than us. You're on TikTok.
Yeah, Johnny B on the keys.
TikTok has its moments.
Well, we will throw all of that in the show notes of our episode. If you're listening on Spotify, Amazon Music, or Apple Music, or Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff. So you can find it there. And while you're at it, make sure that you're subscribing if you are watching on YouTube to Babes Babes Podcast. We are at Babes Babes Pod on Twitter and at Babes Babes Podcast on Instagram. If you feel so inclined to rate and review, we would love you and love that. But most importantly, just make sure you're following and you're subscribed so you won't miss out on our next episode. John, thank you so much again for joining us tonight. I'm not going to say go Cubs, but go you, go organist.
I was just going to ask, will you play us go Cubs go as we
if we have to.
Sure.
I'm going to mute myself.
Do the chorus. See,
Kelsey, sing along. All right.
Never. It is catchy as all hell. I'll give it that. My husband,
and it'll be in my head. All yeah.
My husband, who's actually from Cleveland. So I always say like we met at the perfect time because it was when they were playing the Guardians then Indians in the World Series. And so I could like have a reason to root against the Cubs other than just being a hater. But he, whenever we hear that song, he like sings along with it. And he's like, it's just so catchy. It's so fun. I'm like, do you want to live in this house? But no, seriously, that was awesome, John. Thank you again for Jonna, who you can find on Twitter at 90s Yanks Kid. I am Kelsey at KBird Tweets on Twitter, and we will catch you all next time on Babes Babes. See ya.